Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special interview segment for the 1973 podcast. We're here with hopefully a friend of the show. That's what I always like to say going forward. Our friend Adele Bonifant Lassus. I know I screwed that up. No, you know, I did my best. You know, I couldn't throw any, you know, French twang in there, no French toast, no French quarter, no French fries, nothing. So you get what you get, but we're happy to have you. So Adele, Ed says that you've watched the show before. Thoughts on the show before we get rolling?
Yes. When he told me y'all were doing this, first of all, there are things that I'm totally blown away by comments and the quips and the ingenious responses that each of y'all have. But I used to watch wrestling with my brothers when they were young. Hulk Hogan, Junkyard Dog, that era, right? So I'm not up to speed on all the WrestleMania now. And I told Ed that the other day, but it's very curious to me how y'all speak of everybody. Second thing is, you know, I'm a true diehard Saints fan. I made sure you knew that. So when y'all are talking about the different sports and hockey, we used to have a team in New Orleans called the Brass. When my kids were young, I used to take them to almost every game. We found out more and more about hockey, and then, of course, it disappeared. So we haven't had hockey as a part of our sports ensemble, really, except when they were young. And Adam's 34 now, so he was probably in his early teens at the time. So it's been a long, long time. So I know a little bit about hockey, but much more from, you know, the mouth of the South there when we were working together. So, yeah. But I actually really like the show. It's beyond me, my comprehension at times, because of your demographics. But I really have enjoyed it the last few weeks that I've been listening.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of people that watch, but they don't want to admit that they watch, because I get to see some analytics on YouTube. And, you know, it's funny because you kind of draw the conclusions of who's watching, but they never want to admit that they watch, or they, you know, they watch hoping to see it fail, or they're not rooting for you. So, you know, I'll take the hate. We love the hate. I mean, especially the emails when we get them. I mean, I comb through all the emails almost every week, and you know, there's some stuff that I could never even just bring on the show and talk about, because it either get too heated or it would get too I don't know, too sideways with the commentary, and so yeah, good stuff. So the floor is yours. Why don't you let everybody know how we got to this point and how Ed asked you to come on the show?
So for the audience, Ed, who is the mouth of the South, and I met, oh gosh, 9 years ago, and we started working together at Run and Try, which y'all know he worked at Run and Try, really, from the Slidell area all the way back into Gulfport to just recently. And we became fast friends because I was hired first to do a little part, some part-time work. And all he was told when he was hired as manager was, can you work with a 57-year-old lady? So he said, I can work with anybody. She'd be like my mom. And I'm like, okay.
There's a joke in there, but I'll just leave it for another time.
Yeah, leave it like for another time. But once we met and he taught me a lot, we talked all the time, really got to develop an incredibly deep, very unconditional relationship and friendship. And through thick and thin, we both went through some very difficult periods during the times we were working together. As y'all know, you've known him a long, long time. So I got to know Suzanne and Big Ed through stories and all the family history. And it was a remarkable opportunity for me to be there physically for Ed when his mom was so ill before her passing, when he left to go to her services and when he came back. And it was really a struggle, but it meant a lot to me to be that person that he could come to and rely on and know that he was loved and cared for and truly understood what he was going through. So that was a moment in my life that I'll treasure. And whenever I have to call him down, I'm like, you know, I'm going to call Suzanne. You know, she has a direct line to me to tell you what to tell you. So it's a connection that we've had. And he's been there for me through thick and thin, became fast friends with my son and daughter. And we stayed in touch with one another, really, just because of the friendship. And so that's where we started. And with the run and try history, I've been an athlete all my life. He taught me a lot about the things he did on the sales end. And we just kept bringing people into the community, and we were hoping that business would survive. And unfortunately it didn't. So we went our separate ways after that job was, but maintained our friendship. So that's how we actually got here. And Ed knows the history of a lot of things that I've been doing since I wasn't working at Run and Try. So if we want to delve into that, we can. Or I can tell you a little bit more about me, because I have no problem telling you about me.
Well, just tell us a little bit, you know, for people that don't know you, like me and Tom, just tell us more about your background and how you got, you know, some of your sports background and how you ended up competing and life coaching and all that other stuff and three different nicknames and aliases and, you know, witness protection and time with the mafia and Whitey Bulger and all that stuff.
So I grew up, I've always been an athlete. Started running and just participating in all the childhood sports that we did. And I had a little talent for the track and field. So I did that, but I was a really competitive tennis player. So any of the running I did through high school and through college was really to supplement being on the tennis court. And I was a championship level. I traveled, you know, was ranked in Louisiana, ranked in the South for many years, and especially into my adult years. Played all the way through till just a few years ago. But I competed really on the circuit and until about 60. I'm 66 now. I'll be 67 in the end of the year. But high level, all championship level, singles, doubles, and mixed. So I would be on the tennis court 7 or 8 matches from Thursday to Sunday, because I was usually in the semis and the finals for all 3 divisions. So that's where the running actually started, was to supplement the tennis. And then I just fell in love with it. So I'm a veteran of 12 marathons. I counted up my half marathons last year, because I don't compete or run them as regularly as I did. And I have 453 half marathons. And that's the 13.1 mile distance. And then I can't even tell you how many 10Ks, but I have run the Crescent City Classic, which is our New Orleans 10K, the day before Easter. It is 48 years old. I have run it 44 times. And the only reason I missed the first 4, I was finishing LSU and also working on my master's at Oklahoma State for 2 years. So I wasn't in town. And I've run it every year since. So I can't be anywhere else except New Orleans on Easter weekend. I run that race. And then the 5Ks were all supplemental runs, and I was competitive for a while, but not anymore. So now I do a lot more walking. I do the cycling and the swimming. I'm not playing a lot of tennis at all right now for the last few years. So I'm not a triathlete like our illustrious, fearless leader over here, as far as competitive. I just use all 3 sports to stay healthy. No, not you, Andy, Ed.
It's like the coleslaw you get with your fish and chips.
But I will tell you this.
Hey, Adele, I gotta put up with these guys, because these are the guys that told me to bring my hockey gear when my mom passed away. these two were the two ringleaders for it, and I can never thank them enough for that. So I'll take being coastline every now and again, you know.
Oh, I got you. I think they're the two of the guys that are in the picture that you showed me that y'all took, right?
Okay, absolutely.
Yeah, I love that picture. That's a cool picture. Too. It's one of the few pictures that we shared from way back then when we had a chance. But to be honest with you, have you ever seen Ed in a tri suit when he's competing? Took my breath away. I'm just telling
you. Wow. I just saw a lot of camel toe when I said I can't look. That's how I just said I can't look. Too many marbles in one bag. I can't do it. Can't do it.
I think it goes back to those salmon colored pants.
Yeah. But you know what, guys, y'all can rock them because you're real men, right? You're real men. You can rock the pig.
I've been told otherwise by a lot of people.
Okay. Well, so my fitness life is really my lifestyle, the fitness and the healthy lifestyle. And I am a cancer survivor. So it truly got me through. I battled cervical and uterine cancer from the age of 30 to 40. which was very proactive on my part. I didn't have any children, and cervical uterine cancer really is a death sentence if you want to have children. But 35 years ago, 36 years ago, with my diagnosis, what I did was have surgeries every couple of months, then some major surgeries. In the interim of all that, I was extremely blessed to have both of my children during those 10 years, which I wasn't even supposed to be here past the age of 40. I'm 26, almost 27 years clear of cancer now. So every day is truly a gift. That's why I wake up every day to cause trouble for somebody. Doesn't matter who it is. It's going to happen. I just know it. So that has a lot to do with my lifestyle, and it has a lot to do with the different things I've done. So my education base was in the human resources, family counseling, marriage and family counseling, a lot of communication therapy, the sex therapy that goes along with the relationship therapy, all of that. Behavioral sciences was really the forte of my master's program in undergrad in psychology and sociology. The reason I got into life coaching and the high performance coaching a few years ago, life changes. I wasn't working at the time. I was working part-time actually for some friends, just trying to make ends meet. And I was approached when I really needed the most to go into that field. And Ed knows my kids, and he says, "Mom, you know, you do this all the time. Why don't you go ahead and establish an income producing career with it?" So with our nutrition business, I've been very, very well versed in the fitness and nutrition business that we have. My son has. So we transform lives every day. We transform lives in that arena. So the high performance coaching and the life skills coaching and all the empowering and encouraging and motivational things that I do is now in a little package. And what happens with that package is I have a framework that I work within when I'm doing some one-on-one or some group coaching. I'm still developing a clientele in that, but it's the frameworks to really develop anything from clarity and focus and confidence, productivity. Time management is some skills that I help people develop in the business arena or personal arena. It's not about an age group, but demographically speaking, when you get into your 30s and 40s and you might be raising kids or you're trying to establish new careers, you tend to lose the focus of good habits because you're so distracted. And that's one of the things that's going on with all the things in the world today and social media and all of the things that really just crowding on your head. You can get very distracted from being really your best self. Your best version of yourself would be a typical phrase that we like to use in that particular industry. So what I try to do is help people really find that. I'm not a therapist. I don't use my therapy and counseling training in this arena because I would have to be licensed as that, and I'm not. And if I find that someone comes to me and says, "I really need some help in this particular area," I'll know definitely they need a licensed practicing psychotherapist or counselor or therapist. So I have people that I can refer them to, but I'm basically not in that arena as far as therapy and psychotherapy. So beyond that, with the motivational and empowering speaking stuff, I've got several platforms that are adaptable to young kids, teenagers. Some of them are in the Christian schools, some are in the public schools. It doesn't matter. It's a lot of them are athletes that I can really promote the ideas of perseverance and endurance and commitment. If I do any coaching with them and use a framework, say focus and visualization and things like that in that arena, then it's going to be specific to what they're trying to accomplish, right? Just, I mean, we've got the Olympics going on now. If you talk to any of the Olympic athletes, they've got psychology coaches, fitness coaches, nutrition coaches. They've got their sports skills, agility, strength, sports specific coaches. They've got the whole package, and they need it now to be competitive at the level that they're competitive. The people that I'm going to come mostly in contact with are might be moms trying to get healthier after they've raised their kids and they've kind of not paid attention to where they are. They don't only need some fitness and nutrition valuable information and guidance and accountability. What they also need is somebody to encourage them beyond kids and husbands or families, because they didn't get it all along, right? Need to change the mindset. Need to say, "Hey, I can only be good for you if I'm good to myself. And I'm worthy to be good to myself. I deserve to be good to myself. And I don't have to care what anybody thinks." So if you can help people realize that their personal skills, their personal beauty inside and out is the direction they should take to make their life its best possible, take its best possible path, that's things I can help them with. And I love doing that kind of motivational and empowering speaking, because if you reach one person and it changes their ability to see the direction they can go in, they might accomplish something that they never thought they could. And they might be able to bring that to somebody else down the road. And I like to share a story that I had. Ed knows I loved running the marathon and half marathon in Disney. And I did that marathon. It was my actually second marathon back in January of 1989. And it wasn't even this Run Disney program they had. I mean, they didn't even have the things that they've obviously developed in the last, 30 years. So the biggest thing is that over the years, I've run the Princess Half Marathon there. And I've come to know people over the years that I look for at all the different marathons and half marathons that I've traveled to run. And there was a lady that showed up. It was 10 years ago at the Disney Half Marathon. She was a very large lady. She was walking with a crutch. It had been storming in the Boston area and snowing, and she had one day to get from the Boston area to Disney World in Florida. And I just happened to come up to her. I had a bunch of magnets I carry around that I pass out to people and encourage them. And I just got to know her standing at a vendor's booth. And I gave her one of my magnets that says, "The miracle is not that I finished, but that I had the courage to start." It's a quote that probably y'all have seen, but I buy 12 of those magnets and I give them out to people that I get to meet and say, "Hey, think about me. I'll be looking for you on the race route. Put in your car, put in your refrigerator, because you did it. You got here and all you did was take the first step by walking out your door and tying up your shoes months before that day." This lady has contacted me every February with a text or a message of some sort. "Hey, Adele, it's Barbara from Boston. Thank you so much for encouraging me that day. The magnet is still on my refrigerator." We had a conversation, and she was a very large lady, walked with a crutch. And I said, "What are you planning to do tomorrow?" She says, "Well, I'm going to do the 5K walk with my husband, the 10K walk by myself with just people from her area that she met, and I'm going to be walking the half marathon by myself, with a crutch." Now, that's a lot of miles. That's 19 point something miles total, because that's what I always did too. And the beauty of that is that I'm this really fit, I was in my 50s, really fit, obviously seasoned runner and athlete. And to this day, she finished all three races, still shoots me a happy February Princess weekend text, because we made a connection. She now has several grandchildren. She is no longer as overweight as she is. And that moment made a difference to her. She has no idea the difference it made to me. So the rewards of what I share come back to me 1,000-fold. So that's why I'm in that arena now. And it's been a very rewarding. I'm still trying to build a financial income base and stability base from it, but it's an ongoing process. So that's where I am now.
Kelly, so where would you like to take this in the next 1 to 3 years? What do you have, some sort of a business plan? Were you thinking about maybe doing a podcast and stuff like that to kind of help build that in,
Actually, yes. And that's part of the speakers forum that I'm following. I connected with a couple of very, very seasoned, established speaking, not coaches so much as they do coach people to do speaking formats, but they love me because I'm just extemporaneous and impromptu. But I've connected with them, so they're leading me in a direction where I can get on stage is actually the best thing to do, or get in front of an audience. So with the speakers area, I've got that. And of course, I'm developing my topics. But with the coaching arena, I've got an opportunity to create a podcast. And I've got some directions now that will lead me into developing that. And the beauty of that is, you guys know, y'all try to do about an hour or so normally when you do your podcast, sometimes a little bit more, a little bit less. You can do something for as easy as 10 minutes and get a message across and start to develop a following. And from that, always offer get on a call with me, or discovery call, get to know me better, get to know you better. Would you be interested in any other types of coaching or informational or speaking formats? So that's going to be key. Of course, y'all have done this now for a couple of years, so you know what's involved in getting it going. The other part is getting together with colleagues that I've met over the last couple of years, which I met with a good friend of mine today. She's actually in the Florida area, had been in Portland, Oregon, and we had a little mastermind of about six of us. She's a business coach, and talking with her today, she gave me some extremely good leads on some things that I can use to build the coaching clientele on the technology part. And I'm challenged on technology. Challenged.
You just proved your point. We heard it with the phone ringing.
Yeah, well, actually, that was that I turned the phone off. That was an alarm to remind me about something that happens every Tuesday, and I forgot to take it off when I set the alarm to make sure I got on the Zoom with you guys. But being challenged technologically means I can resource those responsibilities out, and it's a gift. All I need to do, show me how to do it, turn it on and turn it off, and somebody else can do the rest. So, yes, and Ed, thank you for leading that question, because I'm taking daily steps forward to develop the business part of it to a much greater degree.
Well, Deli, would you like to have like maybe some more younger athletes and stuff like that that you could help, you know, via Zoom and stuff like that? And, you know, would you, because pretty much with our demographics that we have with the podcast here, we are, 96.5%. I'm sorry, 95.5% male-driven audience. So there's a lot of dads on here that, you know, maybe want their sons or daughters to maybe kind of, you know, take it to the next level. I mean, because last week we had Keely Smith on from Sacred Heart University. So, you know, we're trying to kind of gear it towards a little bit, maybe helping some youngsters with their athletics and that type of thing. And so, and a lot of mindset stuff. Taking it to the next level. That's a huge thing that a lot of the pros do as well.
Right. And you can do it sport specific, because you can take somebody who's doing track and field and take somebody who's in a singular competitive sport, say like tennis. Swimming a lot of times is a singular competitive sport because you have to do it on your own, but you're part of a team. So there's a lot of visualization and there's a lot of psychology, as y'all know, because y'all competed when you were younger. So yeah, there's a lot of things out there, and then just having the resources, if they're looking for the physical or the nutrition or the sport specific agility, there's resources out there to offer them, as well as the mindset, the psychology, the win loss, the building the confidence, and really the self-esteem in the younger athletes. A lot of them have that because they are driven, but those that don't, that have natural talent and gifts, need that to be developed. And the only way they usually get it and they become part of it, become intuitive, is through the help and accountability or mindset or visualization. Basically, this part, the mental part of coaching, compared to what their physical gifts are and talents are, which would be their physical agility, strength, sport-specific coaches. So yes, definitely, I'd love to be doing a lot of that. It doesn't matter if it's male or female either. Now, if it's a sport that I'm not necessarily as well-versed in, because I'm not as well-versed in hockey, as I mentioned, the key would be having the right resources to know what some of those athletes do. And that's based on my own personal research that I can learn from the outside looking in to be better prepared to help them with what I can offer them compared to what their physical and training coaches can offer them.
Tom, question.
Sure. Did being a high-performance coach lead you to being a motivational speaker, or was it vice versa? Because to me, it seems like being a coach, there's a lot of motivational speaking that's kind of involved in coaching.
I actually did a lot more human resource and motivational things prior to having the opportunity to get certified as a coach. And honestly, I'll be very, very honest with you. I did not think I would pursue a lot of the speaking, because I do it all the time without using it in a structured platform where it can be an offer that might be income producing for me, as well as reaching larger audiences. One of my major desires, and I'll share this with you, Tom, Ed knows I love the beach. I would love to have a group of whoever it is, if it's a group of ladies go for a walk, have an iced tea or whatever they choose to drink, go for some walks on the beach and have sessions doing that, or sitting on a bench at a park after a walk, after a run, maybe after a bike ride, or just sitting with a group of people having conversation. It doesn't have to be in the structure of an office. Obviously, a lot of calls are done by Zoom now. Face-to-face is a beautiful opportunity because you really get to see their reaction. You get to feel them near you. And so as many times as I could, I would do that. And that's where a lot of the motivation comes in, when you're actually maybe planning or working in a certain framework. So yes, and thank you.
Adele, I got a question. So yes. If you're a person that's in that neutral stage where you're kind of put a lot of stuff off for yourself because you're focused on a schedule for whatever that is, What is the first thing that you would tell them to do positive wise, like get out and get walking first? And what's the first thing you would tell them to cut out, like sugar or you know, your diet, or your first thing you would tell them positive and to cut out to move forward into, you know, the next step of, you know, regenerating yourself and your life? What would that be? Yeah.
The transformation that they'd like to achieve. I use the word transformation because that's basically what happens, right? It's a big word, but when people hear that word, they automatically think, I can be better than who I am now, because that's a long-term goal down the road, right? The first thing I'm going to look at, and I'll respond three different ways, if you don't mind, Andy. First thing I'm going to look at is really kind of like a wellness profile with them. And I'm not talking just food or fitness. I'm talking where they are in life right now. And if one of the things they need to do is get some fresh air, they're going to go walk around the block. I'm going to tell them, just put the phone down. If you want to carry something for security, carry a house key and carry something that you can use if you have an emergency, but turn it off because you absolutely need it, and walk around the block. And every day or 5 days a week, add another block. So eventually you're out there 10 or 15 minutes. Get that away from all of the distractions. Find a happy place. That's going to be the first thing. The second thing, if I do look at the food, is going to try to really cut down on any sugar intake that they have. Sugar really affects the brain health. It affects the heart health. It affects the weight and nutrition that you're not getting. It really, y'all know that. If they're a smoker, I'm going to tell them they really need to quit. I hate smoking. I've never smoked. I'm horrible about smoking for many, many reasons. If they are a smoker, they really need to quit, because they need to prolong their life and they need to improve their environment, because it's not helping them even with secondhand smoke. So those would probably be the biggest three priority things I'm going to ask them. And then I'll get into a wellness profile with the food and fitness. If they really drink a little too much on the alcoholic side, I'll ask them to start cutting back and portion control on food, alcohol intake, as well as hydration and all the other things that go in that. But those would be the three biggest things from the start.
Tom, you got another question?
Well, I'm just curious, what inspired you to become an endurance athlete? Because up here, when they have the Boston Marathon, you see a lot of stories, and it's usually people that are cancer survivors. So I was curious, that's what got you into running?
I started running in high school to supplement my performance on the tennis court. I just fell in love with it. There are very few people that are runners or triathletes that are also competitive, and I'm talking high level, championship level, that lose to someone who doesn't have the endurance base that a runner has. I was beating kids, ladies 30 years younger, because if you can't stay out in 3 or 4 hours, I can. Hey, I'm at mile 20 or 22 by that time. I'm almost finished the marathon. I've got food and beverage left. So the key to getting into the marathon parts of my life, I ran my first marathon a month after I turned 40. I was running and started building up. Every time I had cancer surgery during those 10 years, I increased the amount of mileage I was doing. I was playing a lot of tennis. It was my sanity. Running was my sanity. It kept me alive, both mentally, physically, spiritually, everything. But because it was easy for me to do and I could release the stress and anxiety of what I was dealing with the cancer. Remember, I had the two children during those 10 years. When I was 32, I had Adam. I was 2 years into my diagnosis. I had Callie at 37. Both of them were miracles, believe me. So at 37, I literally turned 40, and my biopsy prior to my 40th birthday, the week I went in, was the first clear biopsy in 10 years. So that was December 6th, 1957. I ran the New Orleans Mardi Gras Marathon on January 17th, a month later, 1998. So my story was, the running was there already, but it saved my life through those 10 years. And I could do it, so I just kept doing it. But great. the stories that were shared along the journey of running with friends and family, meeting people that I've met, made it that much more impactful for myself and rewarding to me, but also for those that I came in contact with, which is where I did a lot of my motivational, encouraging moments. So thank you for that question.
Ed, you have another question for Adele?
Well, I'm gonna deviate from the coaching part now. I'm gonna go into some relevant topics that I know that she'll love to do a deep dive into. So, Deli, I'm gonna let it rip. I mean, I'm just gonna say, what do you think about men and women's sports?
Okay. So
you knew the question was coming. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I am biologically female. I compete in the female category. Always have, always will. The only difference in categories I competed in were age group categories as I aged into senior running, masters, and senior age brackets in tennis, right? Okay. That being said, I will always compete and perform as a female. So my comment to that is, I truly, truly believe, I have no judgment. This is a non-judgment answer. I have no judgment to lifestyles and choices or changes that people make because of their choices. I do have an issue with how they compete at the minimal level, like t-ball, to elementary sports, to high school sports, to college sports, to qualified top of the world Olympic athletes. I have an issue with competing in the opposite of your biological gender. I don't think it's fair to either side because of the physical, hormonal, chemical makeup that you receive in your biological gender at birth. Did I say it nicely? Okay. I mean, I've got to watch the ethics here, right, guys?
Right. Right. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but Adele, you don't have a human resources department, so.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I'm building a business and coaching as well, you know, and motivation.
There is that.
So this is the deal. This is the honest to God deal. I'm looking at Olympic athletes. I'm looking at my grandsons, you know, who are 5 and 12 competing in Little League or, you know, youth soccer, and the older ones getting ready to go to junior high now. My problem with that issue is you see it, it's so sensationalized in the media that it's now become a huge issue. And I have a problem when I go to enter a race or whatever that says male, female, is like I always check my gender for competitive races or whatever I was doing. And now there's six different categories. And I'm like, wait a minute. If you're a male, you're a male. If you're a female, you're a female. That's the bottom line, right? And I look at it that way. So I should compete against females. If I choose to compete against in the male division, then I'm challenging myself. Okay, I have no problem with that. But if I'm changing and making notoriety of it and using it as a platform and taking it to this exponential level, I'm still a biological female. That's where I should compete, and that's where my results will make a difference. If I want a challenge to see if I can beat a male at something or ride faster on my bike, that's my own personal challenge. That's not going into the media. It's not being sensationalized. And I just have a real issue because of the physical, biological, mental, chemical, you name it, basis of the difference in biological genders.
That's a great answer. It's a great answer. You know, you tiptoed around everything. It's a great, great answer, though, because you checked all the boxes. No pun intended with that. But I got to, this is more of a Gen X question, and okay. Adele is in our age demographic for this question. I struggle with this as an older dad of two preteen kids, 10 and 12. Where did we go so far off the path of sports in the 70s and 80s to where it is now, the wussification of sports, the not being allowed to be just a regular dude? Like, what I mean by that is, when I was a kid, you're drawn to certain athletes or pop culture people or something that you think is cool as a kid. We didn't have social media back then, so it was television driven. I thought Evel Knievel was the coolest guy on the planet at one time. You hear all the stories after how he was, but as a kid, you're going, wow, this guy's awesome. Where did we go wrong as a society from going from the Burt Reynolds, that era to where we are now, where, you know, you can't even be a guy anymore. You have to be just vanilla.
Right.
What's your thoughts on that?
So I believe a lot of it has to do with the lack of accountability and the lack of people not being told no, and the lack of letting people make mistakes or not make the all-star team or not make the team at all, right? It's okay to not do everything, but the accountability and the accepting of everybody deserves a trophy for participation. I got that. Okay. All right. You want to do that. I did that in the swimming arena. My daughter swam most of her life. And these little bitty children are not fast, but all they want is a little ribbon or a little trophy. But as they get older, they earn that first place ribbon. They're not given a first place ribbon. They earn that high point winning trophy for the league or the championships. They earn that coach's award for sportsmanship and community and service to their teammates. Not everybody gets it. So not everybody should. So my way of thinking right now and looking at education when I was there, they used paddles when I was coming up. And I'm telling you, they used paddles. And I didn't believe in them, but they used them. You had people out there teaching you right from wrong, 2 + 2 = 4. And that's the way it always is. The value system has changed to be too accommodating. And I don't believe everybody should be the all-star. I have been the all-star and I have not been the all-star. I have been president of everything and then I'm not. I know what it takes to achieve the pinnacle, whether it's a position as a director or being voted president of the student council, which is only one that year in the entire universe, that was me. Okay, I had that privilege. I used that platform. But the deal is that the accountability from the coaches and the parents is not there anymore. And you're seeing it in education too. So you're not being supplemented in the education arena to teach the athletes that are participating. Let's just take the high school level of sports. If they don't make the grade, they shouldn't be allowed to participate in anything. A club, a sport, cheerleading, you know, band, anything. We had those accountability markers. If you didn't have a B average and maintain that time management for your studies, your practice, your competition events, you didn't do it. And you were supported at home by the parents. That's what the school rules were. That's what the school parameters were. You didn't get a letter just because you sat the bench. You got a letter because you were able to practice, participate, and be part of a team. You gave something to part of that team. If you did an individual sport, you still had to show up for your practice. You still had to make your commitment. And whether you came first place, second place, third place, or last, if you showed up every day and you did what was required and you kept that 3.0 average, then you had the opportunity to get a letter and potentially a letter jacket. If you didn't, you don't get it. So I don't believe that everybody deserves the awards. And I don't believe everybody should make the team. And the accountability factor is huge. And I also believe that parental influence has been a major negative factor in the last two decades compared to the positive factor it was as a support to a coach or participation as a coach or participation as a team support person, like bring the snacks, help the coach make the phone calls for practices or cancel practices or traveling arrangements. Help the coach do that because the coach is out there making arrangements to teach these kids how to develop both as an athlete, but as a qualified, important, service, community-oriented child into an adult. Nowadays, you don't have that to the same degree. You have it, but it's more recognized on the negative end.
Before I kick another question to Tom, I just want to say I agree. Real quick, I don't want to get on a diatribe with the whole thing, but you're setting these kids up to fail because when you get into the real world, let's just say there's one job. Mm-hmm. Two people go for that job. One person's going to get it. One person's going to be butthurt. That's just how it is. They don't create a new job for the person that didn't get the job. That's just like a participation trophy. You don't get something. You competed for one job, one person. There's a winner and a loser, and that's it. Any championship, there's a loser. Your second place is, you know, first loser. That's what they say. And then you, how you deal with it has changed too. You have people that are able to brush it off and move on and try harder or try something else or try something different. And it's no big deal. It's just a win and a loss. Then you have people that have to be medicated because they can't cope with something that's that big or small in their life. That's what I have a problem with. And I think setting up the kids with participation trophies long-term is a bad metaphor for what you're going to deal with in life. So Thomas, question to follow that up.
Sure. It's kind of totally off topic, but I saw on your bio, you're an LSU girl. So my question is, are you a Nick Saban girl or are you a Les Miles girl?
Let me explain that right off the bat. I chose the Saints shirt on purpose because we're getting into the football season. Mm-hmm. Les Miles is a character. I think he did a lot of good things, but he also had some skeletons in the back closet. Nick Saban, I respect him. I respect what he's done as a coach. Nobody liked him when he left LSU. He took a national championship, but I will tell you this. He took a lot of great memories. He didn't put up with a lot of crap from athletes that didn't pull their weight, like just talking about. Mm-hmm. And he made something of those guys. When you went to Alabama, I don't know if y'all saw the ESPY Awards and his reception of the Icon Award. His speech recognized his year at LSU, which was the very end of his speech. But it recognized what he accomplished in creating men, not just athletes. And I respect him for what he's done in that arena. Now, will I wear Alabama or encourage anybody I know to go to Alabama? No. There's only one school and it's LSU. But I do respect him a lot more than I respect Les Miles post Miles' contribution to the success of the LSU program. Because he did do some things that I don't agree with that allowed athletes to still participate. And then it took them three tries, three strikes, you're out. I'll give you a prime example. Tyrann Mathieu had everything going for him. He's now a Saint. He'll finish his career as a Saint. That boy had some issues. He was given a second chance by Les Miles and then he was gone. But that boy took with it. He had a great family background and support. He went to St. Augustine High school here, which is a Catholic, black, all boys Catholic school here. They don't put up with any crap. Les Miles gave him two chances. He was gone. He made a really good name for himself professionally as an athlete, but a better name for himself in the last few years as a leader of his team. He's got a Super Bowl ring. He's made a better name for himself in a community as a service-oriented individual using his money, fame, and platform to create men and women who of character and service, beyond their talent and skill as an athlete. That to me says a lot from make the mistakes, lose what he created, and take it to a different level.
My takeaway from that, Adele, is you're saying that Alabama is a participation trophy. Is that what you're saying with that? Can we quote you on that?
No, don't quote me on that, because I don't think Nick Saban kept the ones who weren't performing. He just took it. He had a really great program there that they thrived in. So I got to give him credit. He's got some great guys.
All right. I just got to keep it moving. That was my takeaway from it. I'm like, oh, well, okay. This lady hates the whole state of Alabama. Good to know.
They have a Buc-ee's in Alabama. I stop at it all the time.
I just went to my first Buc-ee's recently. And oh, man, it was like going into the cantina in Star Wars. That's all I'm going to say.
Where was it?
South Carolina, near south of the border, down that way. We were going to Charleston. What a ride that was. Oh, my God. From here down to there, it was like 14 hours in a car. Not fun.
The smell alone is horrible.
Oh, I had hockey equipment in my car, too, so that didn't help. Ed, any more questions?
I got one last one. Deli, who's the best quarterback, Tom Brady or Drew Brees?
My boyfriend, Drew Brees. He's my boyfriend.
We didn't say shirts off. We just said.
I got to go with Drew. I mean, he's got one Super Bowl ring, but the stuff he did, the numbers he put up. I mean, Tom Brady's a great guy. He's the GOAT. I give him credit for that. But my next number 9, because my favorite number is 9 from when I was a little girl. Drew just happened to wear my number. Joe Burrow has the makings of a Drew Brees career if he can stay in Drew. Mm-hmm. He's got the character for that. So,
Thomas, do you have any questions?
No, I'm. Everything was answered.
So, the greatest number 9 of all time is Gordie Howe. So we, you know, that's.
I'll go with you there.
It's got to be. Anyways, Adele, I just want to say thank you for coming on. Hopefully we can have you on again. Hopefully we can, if you get the podcast going, maybe we can cross promote, work on something that way behind the scenes and see what we can get going. You can reach out to Ed. You can reach out to me, but I want everybody to know how to reach out to you and, promote whatever you need to, as far as getting in touch with you, or any coaching or any other questions that they have through this podcast. Hopefully we can, get some eyes on you and help you out with that. So
that'd be great. What I have right now, because I'm setting up the link stuff to the calendar and everything. Right now I'm on Facebook, which is Adele Bonifons, not LaSeuse. And then I have my email, which you can post my email if you want in the link. And that would be the best way right now. And you can direct message me once you do the Facebook link. And that's the easiest way right now while I'm setting up the other business part of it, technologically.
She is definitely challenged there.
If you have any questions on that, you can always reach out. I can help you out with that.
I would love you to. Thank you so much.
I'm continuing with the learning of this whole podcasting world. So, I just want to say thanks. Thanks from the guys. Thank you for the positivity that you brought to the interview, the story. I'm sure that it's really deeper than just, a quick hour interview that we've done. And hopefully we can have you back on and yuck it up a little bit. And, we're at our best when we are what I like to call chirping and telling stories about certain things that we have to color within that thin line that we have on this platform.
I do appreciate everything. I appreciate your time. I love my Ed. We try to get together. I'm gonna be in Destin about an hour away from him in October, and I already told him he's got to get Elizabeth to come and have dinner with my significant other, and I will be down there for a week, or I'll take a drive down there. But
who the hell is that?
He gets his birthday dinner every year. And we took him for his 50th birthday to have really good food in Bay St. Louis when he was still in the Gulfport area, Mississippi. And it was a lot of
fun. Very thankful she allowed you to do
it. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to do it. You know, you guys, I got to feed him. He's down south.
Thank you so much
for your time. I appreciate it.
What I got to say before we leave, and this is the thing. I'm mad because I've known this guy almost my whole life, and I didn't even know he had a girlfriend or her name was Elizabeth. What the hell is going on here?
I guess that has to be edited out.
Oh, jeez. It's not getting edited out. They're all done now. He's all done. He forget about it. When Brad gets on here and the Phantom, they're going to rip him up. I know it.
Ed, I'm not going to apologize.
There's no need to.
Next thing you're going to tell me, the guy shoots blanks, and we didn't even know that either.
That I don't know yet, okay? I don't know.
Oh, okay. And nothing you can't figure out. You that's all. So,
thank you all so much, guys. I appreciate it. Shoot me a text when y'all are going to be airing this, and that way I'll get my family.
Absolutely.
We will.
Okay. Thank you so much, Adele.
Thank you.
Thank you, Deli.